guilty, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible? That was the question for myself. And it is absolutely possible.
Good afternoon, Australia. Good evening, America. And welcome to everyone listening across the planet today. This is the Everyday Business Show, and I'm your host, Tony Lontis. Just a reminder, if you're listening live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, Payo is ready, waiting, and listening to provide all the links to anything that we talk about on the show today, particularly the links to get in touch with our amazing guest, who I'll be introducing you to in a little moment. If you're watching this show on replay, on Binge, Hero Go, Tony TV, from your smart TV, description notes will contain the links. If that is not enough for you, please jump on to tonylontis.com, where you'll find under the co-host and guest section information about each and every one of our guests that we feature on their show, plus their links and how to connect with them. Now, we've been doing something different this year, and I'm going to continue with that, and that is our Welcome to Country, and it's an international movement that acknowledges the special and important role that Indigenous communities play in the development of a country's cultural identity. And it's incredibly important for us to keep doing this and recognize our Indigenous elders from past and present. So I want to respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, which sits on the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australia, the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, and pay my respects to the elders past and present and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here today listening. Now, we have a gorgeous young man with us today, and who it's my privilege to have spent many conversations with, and he's a special guest today, and this is what you need to know. But before I talk to you about Matthew, I want to issue a trigger warning, because the subject that we're talking about today is close to a lot of people's hearts. So please, if this causes any issues for you, I want you to immediately reach out and talk to someone, because that's the most important thing that you can do. Now, our interview today is, what would you do with a second chance at life? Now, Matthew is a youth advocate, suicide survivor, and mental fitness facilitator. Up until the age of 12, Matt lived a very typical life for a child in the city of Sydney. He had a great family, lots of friends, and a comforting neighbourhood. But then everything changed drastically. Matthew began to question his self-worth, his self-image, and whether he even brought value to the world. As the tentacles of depression embedded in his life, his worthlessness increased, and he struggled with these emotions by himself. He bottled them up inside and kept them within. This led him on a path of destruction with drug use, and at the age of 16, he decided that enough was enough, and he attempted suicide to end the pain and suffering that he was feeling. Thankfully for us, Matt was unsuccessful and instead woke up in the spinal cord injury unit of the hospital, unable to walk and confined to a wheelchair. We say thankfully because we now get to chat to this amazing, beautiful young man. Matt's mission is to inform, inspire, and influence millions of mindsets, and for them to improve their quality of life. His goal is to facilitate a person towards transforming adversity into an advantage through the power of self-awareness, values, and authenticity. Welcome to the show, Matt.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. I've never been introduced in quite a manner.
Oh, that's fine. It's my pleasure to have you here. And I have to say that I'm really grateful and gracious that you're enabling us to have this powerful conversation today, because I think it's one that we need to continually have, and it takes an incredibly brave young man to appear live on air and talk about something so traumatic and so triggering for you as well, Matt. So I want to go back to that moment when you thought that, okay, enough's enough, I can't do this anymore, and you ended up, instead of entering eternity, you ended up in a hospital bed. Do you remember much of that initial time after you woke up?
After I woke up, it was quite a blur. I was heavily medicated in ICU, just, you know, I remember very, very, like, I don't even know what the word is, like, just vague moments.
Blurry.
Blurry, yeah. The main thing I remember, though, was this one thought that I just had day in, day out, and this lingered all the way through hospital and beyond. Because if I was worthless beforehand, and if that's what brought me to try to end my own life, how pathetic was I now for the fact that I had failed the one thing I wanted to do?
Matt, so were you able to talk to someone? Obviously, you were incredibly ill. The fact that you were in ICU, and I'm guessing from my nurse perspective, you would have been intubated for a reasonable amount of time. And so I'm thinking that when you were eventually not intubated, and when I say intubated, that's breathing tubes down your throat and doing your breathing for you. And I'm assuming that your family were pretty close around you by that stage. What were some of the first things that you talked about, and was help immediately available to start working on some of the thoughts that were running through your head? Was that one of the first things that happened, or were they still really focused on keeping you alive at that point?
It was really about keeping me alive from what I remember initially, though it was when I got into the spinal ward. So this is after a month of ICU.
Yes.
That's when, like, support was, and I mean, like, heavily around me. Like, don't get me wrong, I started support back in ICU and all this other stuff. And hell, I mean, one of the big, I would say the biggest support I had at the time was people were gifting me CDs. I used to love music and I still do. It's a big part of my life.
Yeah.
And to have, like, you know, Dark Side of the Moon playing in the background, or all the other bands that I used to, like, listen to, right? Like, that was the biggest thing. It was funny. There's one album that I used to listen to before my injury every single day, and my family knew it. It was Illy Cinematic, and they played the song Tightrope, and apparently I'm laying in bed, like, I'm not even awake, whatever, but I start mouthing the words to the song.
Oh, that's awesome.
In perfect time. I'm like, what's going on? I obviously don't remember it, but just hearing that, it's just crazy.
Yes. And obviously that was helpful to try and sort of anchor you back into reality as well. It was good that your family knew that, and that I'm guessing music was actually very instrumental in starting to get you well again.
It was a seriously big part. I was very, very blessed as well. I had a great friend who, now this is what, because I broke both my wrists. Like, I've got like
ouch
injuries, like, you can barely see it on camera.
I know. I know. Marks. Look at that. I don't know if you can see that. It's wonky. It's, yeah, I get it.
But yeah, so after my wrists had healed, like just a slight bit more, where I was now off the cast and I was onto splints, one of my good friends gifted me an acoustic guitar. And this guitar I still have to this day. Nothing meant more to me at the time, and still to this day, I really hold it close to me, because just being able to play that again just brought a level of life that I felt
back
like I'd lost.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, that process of playing the guitar is actually really good physio and rehab for those broken wrists.
It was, don't get me wrong, it was painful, but hey,
oh gosh,
didn't matter. I was playing guitar, like,
That's awesome. Awesome. I'm wondering if you remember how your family reacted. I'm guessing that from their perspective, and I know that we've talked about this before, and you said that it was retrospective. You didn't actually realize at the time what they were going through or what they were thinking. It was in subsequent conversations as you healed and got better that you realized how they reacted and what they felt. Can you talk about that, Matt?
For sure, yeah. I want to just pre-frame this as well with my attempt and everything. So I've been feeling depressed at this stage for 4 years and no one in my family knew about it.
Yes.
And to the world, I basically looked quote-unquote perfect. I posted this image online. I wanted to show off and all that stuff. And the night I attempted was the night before we were supposed to go on a family holiday. So my family have woken up in the morning excited to go like, hey, we're going to go down south. We're going to go stay by the beach for a week. It's going to be a beautiful experience, a great time to connect and get closer, spend time with one another.
Yeah.
And then they wake up and the son's not home, but not only is the son not home, but he's gone and tried to end his own life.
Ew. Yeah.
So that was a rude shock. And like sharing that today. Just, I really like, I can't picture what it would be like to be in that position.
Yeah.
Though afterwards, their immediate reaction to me was just to keep me really close. Almost like latch on because they didn't know how to respond. It was such a shock. My family hadn't dealt with suicide in the past. Mm-hmm. And, they just wanted to keep me close and immediately I started to see that they treated me differently and I actually didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you notice that, you start to build a resistance and almost resentment towards that person.
Yeah.
But
that's a normal reaction for them.
It is though.
But it just makes it harder for you in that space.
You still feel like the same person.
Yeah.
That doesn't change. But they just want to adapt because they're coming from a place of love.
Mm.
That's all it is.
Matt, one of the things that I wanted to try and talk about with your permission today is that around depression and teenagers. And I know that my depression started in my teenage years and I would never have talked to anyone about it and in fact didn't talk to anyone about it until my 40s. And I want to know your thoughts around how we connect with our teenagers and actually get to understand what's going on in that mind of theirs, because as you said, you presented as happy and that everything was fine, but underneath there were those deeply loathing, dark, horrible thoughts. What do you think about that now from your experience, and what do you suggest for people listening to make sure they connect with their teenagers in a way that ensures that they're discussing some of those feelings that they might be experiencing?
Mm. The first part to that question is I was just in a space where I didn't know when I first became depressed, I didn't know how to talk about these things. When I was first in that low spot, no one had these conversations. So, and if someone was upset, they kept to themselves, they distanced, they backed off, and no one would approach them. So I had no idea about how to address these like emotions and I don't want to go against the norm, obviously. Everyone else is this way, so I'm going to be that way as well.
Yeah.
But one thing that I think is really key, and I think everyone listening, and even yourself, Tony, could relate to this, is when you're talking to someone, you know straight away when they're not listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious. And if you're making yourself vulnerable in that moment and you see them looking at their phone, they're on their watch, they're scrolling through Facebook and you're opening up, you're not going to feel very good.
Nope.
And I think whether this is you making yourself vulnerable, you sharing something great, it doesn't matter. If you are with someone, be with them. And when I say be with them, I'm going to just dive a little bit into listening.
Please.
Because this is something so overlooked. It sounds simple. Listening is common sense. Okay, if you're physically with that person, give them your complete physical presence. Don't try not to distract yourself, fidget, not stuff. Try to be with them. That's physically. Mentally, put all your attention, focus.
On that person.
Listen. Yeah, exactly. Take in what they're saying. Mm. And then lastly, emotionally. Be emotionally present. Mm. Try to put yourself in their shoes and understand maybe why they're experiencing the way, like why they're feeling the way they're feeling, whether it's something good, bad, it doesn't matter. Or what it's about is being there with that person, being present. And by being present, they're going to feel a sense of connection, because by being physically, mentally, and emotionally present, you're also showing empathy in that moment, because now you're understanding them. And if they feel understood, they feel heard, they're going to feel a sense of not only connection but support.
Mm-hmm.
And when they feel that, that creates a space now where they're more comfortable to open up, share, and connect deeply with you. That's what meaningful connection starts at.
Yeah. And Matt, it's actually part of the reason why you and I are having this conversation is also so that people are aware that some of the most depressed and suicidal people in the world will present as being happy-go-lucky, everything's okay. That's the dichotomy of the whole situation, that they may indeed be high-functioning, highly successful people in their own right, but in the dark, deep recesses of their mind and in their quiet times, there's an issue with depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. And so what you're saying is we need to be really present to catch those moments when we might be able to save a life. Yeah?
Absolutely. If we're distracting ourselves constantly, we're going to miss it. And if we miss something, that could be a serious sign.
Yeah.
And if we catch it, we could potentially save a life.
Absolutely.
Like that, it's just to go back to almost like my story too. Like,
yes.
The night I jumped, like that day leading up, there were many signs. Yes. Many signs.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that from, like, obviously, again, it's retrospective learning, but can you tell us about some of those signs, Matt, for the audience so that they understand?
Well, it's like I was acting out of my ordinary self. Mm-hmm. So first, like, sort of red flag is I'm an early riser, typically, you know, 5:30 up. I was up a lot later that morning. Secondly, I was heaps into the gym. And as you said earlier, so many times the people that are the most upset, most depressed, they tend to present the best. I was definitely that. I posted this photo a week beforehand of me topless on Facebook. And, you know, I was the biggest, most ripped person around at the time. I didn't have to toot my own horn, but really, like, I worked so hard for it. And, posted that photo and everyone believed me. But here I am for the last year and a half going gym 6 days a week, and now all of a sudden on a Saturday I'm going to go on holidays, I'm potentially going to miss a week of gym. I don't go. What do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense, right? And
it's those little things to be aware of, and that falls into that paying attention and knowing someone really well to see, okay, this is not okay. This is not great.
And one thing I was good at was brushing it off. I'm tired.
Mm.
I'm all right. I'm good. Just, you know, not feeling it today. And not just taking that surface answer as the answer, but maybe diving a little bit further with it. Maybe addressing what you see, right? Because in that moment, you sense something's off. Don't just let that slide. Address that. Say, like, well, in that example that I just shared based on my story, hey, Matt, like, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like you. You've been going gym so consistently. Why would you miss a day or potentially missing a week of it?
Yeah, it was, yeah, okay.
Because that's not coming from a bad place. By coming f by having genuine intent of wanting to support someone else and then sharing something like that, it's actually I think not only more beneficial, but it's powerful
Yes.
because you're helping them see themselves in that way as well.
Definitely. Matt, we're talking about mental health issues and mental health illness. What do you consider mental fitness means, and why is that important for people to understand?
Mental fitness, similar to how physical fitness is. We need to be eating healthy. We need to be exercising, keeping our bodies physically fit. How about keeping our mind mentally fit? How can we increase our level of mental strength, understand and overcome our fears, build that muscle of resilience? But to sum up all those fancy words, just really what it means to bounce back when times get tough. Because that's what our mental fitness really is. And there are many things we can do to strengthen that up within ourselves. One way, it's not the best way, it's how I learned, is through your own adversity. But we can avoid that route if we take the right steps and listen to the right people.
Matt, was that a key to you being healthy and whole again, was working on your mental fitness?
For me, a big part of my recovery was learning the one thing that I needed to learn, which was opening up, which is a part of mental fitness. And then, yes, working on that as a whole. Now, don't get me wrong, at the time, I didn't know what the hell mental fitness was. It didn't mean anything to me. Hell, mental health, I didn't want to talk about. But when I was really improving that's when the recovery really began. Now, I'm still in a wheelchair. Don't get me wrong. Hell, I'm in the middle of my standing frame right now. But I know for not only do I know for a fact I'm going to be out of this thing, I know for a fact that this is the real healing up here. The
Definitely.
physical is just a byproduct.
I was just going to say some of the advances in spinal cord injury around biotics, etc., etc., are incredibly exciting. So the thought that you will one day be walking because of those endeavors. And the other thing is, too, that there's a link between your mental healing and your bodily healing. And people underestimate the amount of work that you do on your mind has an impact on your body. So the more healthy your mind is, the better your mindset is, the more you allow yourself to be coached or mentored or have counseling. And I'll really admit, I still go and have a regular checkup with my psychologist. Do I need it? Not always, but yeah, I still make sure that I check in because I know for me that's important. Once you've had depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts, you've got to be very aware that they can crop up again at inopportune times and for whatever reason. And sometimes it's the smallest things that can tip you over to the over that edge that have you saying negative things to yourself, beating yourself up, being horrible to yourself. And I have to actually do a check-in again and go back and see my long-term therapist and just go, this is what's going on, and we'll work away and have techniques that help me get back on track again. But once you've been to that situation, Matt, you've got to make sure that just like your bodily fitness, you've got to keep your brain fit, and that's part of your toolkit to keep your brain fit. Matt, in talking about your family, I'm guessing that they've been on a journey too and had to learn a lot about mental health and suicidal thoughts and that as well. How are they doing?
My family now, they're doing really well. They really are. And Yeah, I'm blessed to, I'm really blessed to say that. I know a lot of people that are in this, they've been in similar positions that I've been in. Their families can be really
Toxic.
bad. Not only toxic, but it can also have that ripple effect where it's now someone else falls into that dark hole as well.
Absolutely.
I'm very grateful that what I went through actually brought me closer with my family,
Oh,
which
that's
was
awesome.
really, really cool to say.
And your greater family will now forever be aware of what to look for, etc., etc. And that's the positive thing out of the whole situation, because it's not just your nuclear family, it's your greater family and friend circle that now have an episode with which to understand and know how bad things can get if we don't check in with people.
Definitely. And that was the biggest thing, actually having these conversations, because
They're
they're uncomfortable.
tough.
They
Oh,
are, they're
God.
uncomfortable. God. But to
They
have them
are.
shows a level of, I would say, strength in the relationship, because now you're showing your vulnerability. And to show your vulnerability takes courage.
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. And we need more young men, because you and I know that it's young men and men that are in the highest risk category for suicide, and suicidal thoughts. And we need to be saving our young men. We need good young men filling the planet with their wonderful uniqueness. We don't want them popping off the earth because of this insidious mental health across our planet. And I think that we just need to keep talking. And Matt, that's part of what you do now and what you love doing, is talking to young people, particularly those in school, and doing workshops and that. Can you tell us about what this incident has led to for you in terms of your business and what you do?
So I love running these workshops, whether it's at high schools, whether it's at corporates, but in particular with high schools, there's that deeper layer that I resonate with, because a lot of what I've been through has been when I was that age, right? So I feel like I really understand where they're at. And when
And
I
those
run these workshops,
emotions, sorry, Matt, those emotions when you're a teenager are incredibly strong and powerful, aren't they?
they are. And we can, it's like, for example, like me, I felt like I knew it all, but there was so much I was yet to learn. And it's that awkward age when it's like, yeah, you feel like you have it all figured out, but there's so much waiting for you that you don't yet realize, yet you think you've got the puzzle solved. No matter what your perspective is, you feel like you've got it sorted. But with these workshops that I run, yes, it's about mental fitness. Yes, it's about mental health, how we can bounce back, become strong and resilient. But at the crux of it all, what it's really about, like the core behind it, is always connection. That is a common theme that I have throughout all my workshops, because that was the one thing that I needed when I was younger. And when I achieved that in my life, things really started to change drastically. And so what I'm finding, and this is popping up all the time, people are reaching out to me, and after my workshops, people are approaching me one-on-one all the time. And at the crux of the what they're experiencing, like what's really going on, is that they're lacking connection, whether it be with themselves, whether it be with their loved ones, someone that they love. It's all about connection. I'm finding.
Definitely, definitely. And it's good that you say, Matt, that it's not just about connection to others. There's a big portion of work around connection to yourself, which includes self-love, self-appreciation, self-caring. Because even if you've got connection to others, if you're still beating yourself up about not doing well in an exam, not performing well in a sporting event, all those things that are inherently important to teenagers, then it's not going to work. You might have connection to others, but if you're still not connecting to yourself in a loving way, it's still going to be a struggle, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that improves this is, and look, it's a broad term, you hear it everywhere, but it's truth, self-awareness.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's our true power.
Definitely.
When we tap into that.
Once you realize that certain circumstances make you angry, for instance, once you realize that if you put me in this situation, I'm going to feel angry. Once you realize that and have self-awareness around that, that actually gives you the power to control that and manage it. If you're not aware of it and just think you're getting aggro and cranky about a certain situation, there's no capacity to manage. There's no capacity to change. There's no capacity to seek help. So it all stems from that, doesn't it, Matt?
Does. It really does. Hell, like, let's talk about like just our emotions, like just as an easy one. I had a bottle here. I would show it, but let's say, like, let's use a bottle as an example, right?
Uh-huh.
You have a liter bottle, and every time an emotion comes up, it's like the water level rising, right?
Yes.
And so when that water comes up, and that liter, let's say it's a bucket, right?
Yeah.
You have two options. You can accept or you can suppress.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you choose to suppress because that's what people typically
that's
like
what they
to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You say you put that fist into the water, and what happens to the water? The water goes up even higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now the water level's higher, i.e. the emotional intensity is a little bit higher. So next time that emotion comes up, it's going to be that little bit more than what it was last time. Now, suppressing could look like anything. It could be drugs. It could be anger. It could be escaping the emotions, help by hanging out with friends. Like, that's a way to escape instead of dealing with it. But let's say you – each and every time it comes up, you suppress. It comes up, you suppress. It comes up, you suppress. And when that bucket gets to a liter, you have, again, two options, accept or suppress. But if you put your fist through that bucket, what's going to happen?
Overflows,
makes a mess, and it spills. Now, that overflow, that spill, that mess is going to happen to everything around the bucket. That's our breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's breaking point looks different. But the common thing about our breaking point is it always affects the people around us.
It does.
But that's suppressing. Let's say you choose to accept it, on the other hand, right? That water level comes up. You choose to drink the water. You accept the water, right?
Mm.
Firstly, you're aware that there's water in that bucket, self-awareness. Yes. Without the awareness, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You're aware, I'm feeling this way right now. So checking in with yourself.
Yeah.
Choosing to accept that emotion. Actually allowing yourself to experience it.
I'm angry, and it's okay to be angry. That's a normal human emotion. It's what you do with that anger. And as you said, Matt, if you suppress it, it's just going to get worse. It's just going to come up again. But if you go, angry, not sure what that's about, and work out a plan to deal with that and go, I'm angry. Let me try and figure out why I'm angry. And then in the future, when you're angry again, you can go, okay, I know what that's about now. And you can manage it better, can't you?
Exactly. And there's one more step. So we're aware, we accept. Mm-hmm. But what happens after we drink the water? What happens to the water? We let it go. We go to the bathroom.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. You're saying letting go, and I've got a vision of Married at First Sight last night, and they needed to let a lot of stuff go.
I'm sure we all do, right? But so we have to let it go. So awareness, acceptance, that last part, authenticity, being authentic about it, and hell, reaching out to someone. That's a big part.
Powerful.
And imagine if we were choosing to be aware, to accept, and to be authentic about our emotions all of the time.
Yeah. And if you can teach that to teenagers before they get to 40, like me, they are going to be way better humans. They are going to be way better contributors to the world, and they're going to be happier, more connected adults, aren't they?
Exactly. I really, really want this to be something that's out there, because that's literally the one lesson I needed to learn, was to open up.
Yeah.
And it's that first step that no one takes, or that no one wants to take. Mm. But to do so is such an act of courage, but also it makes you a lot stronger as a result.
Yeah. Matt, in talking to teenagers as often as you do, do you think that they are starting to understand some of the issues around mental health? Are they beginning to understand the importance of mental fitness? Are they understanding the importance of human connection? Do you think that the tide is turning in terms of education around mental health and mental health illnesses?
I definitely feel it is, and the thing about mental health and depression and anxiety or whatever you have going on for you, because it's dictating your emotions and our emotions being the most real experience about life, because that's what feels true in any moment. We typically succumb to them, and because they seem real, we not only reject anything that's opposing it, but we just keep ourselves boxed up. And so while, yes, things are getting better, someone who's caught in that space is just rejecting. If people are saying, oh, go reach out, seek support, they're just going to give you the finger. Because, right, like maybe not physically but in their mind, because you are not going to where they're at. Though, if you're able to reach them in a meaningful way, what I'm finding is at my workshops, and even talking about this, like honestly, it gets me kind of emotional because I know this is what I needed when I was 12. Because so many times I hear the same thing over and over. Matt, I've been feeling, thinking, and acting similarly to the way you were when you were younger. This is from adults and young people. It's not just young people. Yeah. And you're the first person I've told.
Yes.
And so what that's saying to me is, okay, you've been feeling, thinking, acting this way for what, 5 years or whatever. I'm the first person.
Yeah.
I'm a complete stranger. But what I've done is I've opened up a space where it's okay to not only safe and able to talk about it, but I'm addressing it as it is. I'm not, and I use this word a lot, but I don't pussyfoot around. The thing is, like, and I do share like my story as a way to open up my workshops, because what it does, it opens up a space where we're now able to talk about these things.
And they're identifying those feelings and going, oh, I've felt a bit like that. Oh, that's gone through my head. So, and that's important, isn't it?
Exactly. And because they've been reached at that level, they're now able to be, how I say it, like in a way somewhat guided. It's like, let's say someone's stuck in a river and there's just mountains surrounding it. You're on top of the mountain. You just so happen to have this ladder, like this, like just throw down. You throw down the ladder. You go down to where they're at, and now you're able to help them out of that boat or kayak or whatever, get them onto the ladder and help them guide them up. Now, you can't force them up that ladder. That's up to them. But what you can do is you can go to where someone's at, try to see, understand. That part of empathy is so important.
Yeah.
And then help guide them up. You don't do the work. You just facilitate the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important for that age group to know that there is help there. They're not alone, that there are people, there are places that they can call. And I remember at being a teenager and thinking that there was nowhere to go and no one to talk to. I would hope that teenagers today actually know and understand that there are places that they can go and that there are people that they can talk to.
And this is the thing, right? Like, it doesn't have to be professional.
No.
Because you can start with someone close to you.
Yes.
Whether that be your parents, your partner, your siblings, your friend, your neighbors, whoever you have close to you. And if you feel like you don't have someone, I wonder, who in your life do you truly support? Think about that for a second. Who do you truly support? And if you were to flip that question on its head, would those people support you?
Yeah.
I think, Matt, yeah.
Do you think if you, at that time, if you had understood some of these things, that you would have talked to your parents or your best mate at all? Do you think if you had have felt that you could, you would have?
It would have made a big difference. And do I think I would have? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was yearning and I was desperate for connection. I really was.
Yeah.
I went to the extremes to sort of achieve it.
Yeah.
Whether it be with myself or with other people, but I took those great lengths, and if I felt like I could have, definitely I would.
Yeah. And if we're talking about drugs, oftentimes the drugs are the thing that's trying to mask the pain or the conversation that you need to have. So sometimes it's actually the conversation will help to guide someone not going down the route of drugs, because it's easy and it's readily available to teenagers in particular. And so if you want to build resilient, strong teenagers, then you have to be checking in with them. Even if they're grumpy and moody and all the rest of it, you got to keep checking in.
So we were talking about the fact that, you know, drugs are easily the escape. And so this is the thing. If we're having these conversations, so if you're a parent and you're having these conversations with your teens, because the thing is, okay, yeah, mental health is something that's uncomfortable to talk about.
It is.
But the conversation around drugs is also uncomfortable. No one wants to think that their 13-year-old son or daughter is going out snorting.
Contemplating. Yeah.
that's scary. And so I want to encourage those conversations, because what it allows for is the not only depth of connection to be strengthened, but also for now you being able to address these uncomfortable topics. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the list goes on, right? You got your mental health and your drugs and your sex. The list just kind of goes on.
But it does.
To have these conversations is crucial. And if they feel supported at home, imagine they were going to mum and dad. I was offered, you know, ice today at a party versus their mates.
Because it has to be a pretty strong teenager in that instance that says no when everyone else is doing it, doesn't it? Like, teenage years are really tough. Matt, this whole experience of attempted suicide has opened up a whole industry and business for you. I want to know what drives your passion now and what you like doing the most at this point in life.
Nothing excites me more than running workshops.
Yeah.
Nothing brings me as much like energy. I mean, yesterday I spoke at
a
to go to school not too far from me. And I, yeah, like, hey, like, I didn't really get a whole lot of sleep the night before, but it didn't matter. I was energized. I was awake. And that was without coffee. but the school are very kind, Mariah College. They offered me coffee when I was there.
As I remember, good. So. Okay, excellent.
But yeah, there's that. I really love that. And yeah, sorry, I forgot the rest of your question.
No, and it's obvious the way that you respond to that question that it's teenagers and young people that you're really passionate about. But you also work with corporations and businesses to talk about these topics as well. But I can see in you the excitement you get from talking to teenagers, and I'm guessing that there's a real positive response from your workshops within schools.
Schools have really responded well. Though, yes. In terms of the corporate world, they've really, really come on board, I would say, in the last 12 months. And so it is somewhat newer to me, although what I'm seeing is it's no different.
No, it's not.
It's just the same issues presented in a different older. Fashion.
Just older. And sometimes they're better at hiding what's going on, because some of those CEOs and that are hiding a lot of stress and discomfort and all of that, whereas teenagers, if you can get in front of them and engage with them, they are actually more liable to open up and talk to you, because you're an engaging young man. And how do schools, if there's someone listening, if there's a principal, a teacher happens to be listening today, what's the best way to get in contact with you, Matt, and ask about your workshops and programs?
Yeah, my website is the best way, www.mattcaruana.com. So that's mattcaruana.com. If you are a social media person, my Instagram is Matt Shares, Facebook is Matt Shares on FB. LinkedIn is Matthew Caruana, and either way,
the website's the best place. I know. I was looking at your website again the other day, and looking at you've got your speaking and all your media and stuff there, so you're readily available to people. You go across the country, Matt. Like, I know we've had 2 years of COVID, but you would normally travel across the country to do your workshops, wouldn't you?
I'm extremely excited because, I mean, I've actually got a flight to Melbourne very Yay! Soon. Yeah, to speak out, speak
That's
out of school
awesome.
Out there. And
fantastic.
I live in Sydney, but no, I've worked all across Australia, and I'm all about making this message, bringing it to everyone, because it's universal.
Yeah.
And
I, as I said before, I can see the passion you have for teenagers, and I share that with you, because if you can talk to someone at 12 and avert those feelings of worthlessness and those tentacles of depression, and I like to describe them as tentacles, because once they start embedding in your mind, they're like the tentacles of an octopus and they just get in there. If you can prevent that from happening to a teenager, you have amazing options as an adult, and you prevent tragedy. You know, there's nothing more tragic than a teenager feeling that they've got nowhere to go, and that pain, they just want it to stop, and the only way that they think that they can get it to stop is via suicidal attempt. And we need to get to those kids before that happens. It's incredibly important.
I couldn't agree more. And imagine if they're having this conversation as a young teenager, even as a kid, what seed are we planting then?
Yes.
And what can that then grow to?
Yes.
And what can that then grow for your relationship with them?
Yes, absolutely. And just that, for them to know, and if there's any teenagers happen to be listening, although they're probably in school, that there is always someone out there that will listen to you. There will be someone. And I'm sure that if you wanted to email Matt, he would respond and go, this is the way forward for you. can't, you know, you've lived this experience, you've survived this experience, and you're here to tell the story and say, don't let it get to that point. Don't feel it's hopeless. And it goes for adults too. Don't allow yourself to get to that point where it feels completely hopeless, where you feel like you've got no other option. There are always options. And the other thing to remember, Matt, is that the thoughts in your head are just thoughts. They're not reality. They're not what's going to make your life. They're just thoughts. And if you don't attach action to the thoughts, they remain thoughts. And you can manage them and you can control them. And there's ways that you can do that, isn't there, Matt?
Yep, there absolutely is. And by not actioning those thoughts, you become greater than them.
Already. Correct. Correct. And sometimes it's just stopping in that moment and going, oh, that's not a great thought, and going, okay, that's just a thought. That doesn't make it true. How do I stop thinking this way? How do I manage these thoughts? How do I get them out of my brain? How do I deal with what's going on in my head? And that's by connection and talking to someone. And please make sure you do that, whether you're a child, a teenager, or an adult. Talk to someone. Hey, Matt, like, that's the key, isn't it?
It's the first step.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Matt, before we run out of time, I want to quickly ask you about your hopes, dreams, and desires for the future. What does it look like for you, Matt?
I'm really big on this, and I see myself traveling internationally regularly
yes.
to facilitate workshops. Mm. I'm going to be having a book coming out.
Yay!
We've
talked about this previously, but I'm really excited that Matt's continuing to do this. It's very exciting.
It's not going to be my first book, but it's not going to be my only book. Sorry, I'm going to have more. Definitely going to have more. This first one's going to be about my story. But I'm in the process of looking for publishers, though. Mm. That's professionally, but personally, the biggest thing that excites me. Kids.
Yes.
I don't know why. Down the line, I'm definitely going to have kids. And I'm blessed even with my injury. I know I can. So
awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So can I ask you live on air, is there someone special in your life?
Not right now, no.
Ah, girls. This is a plug for Matt. If you want the most amazing young man on the planet, contact Matt now. Now, this is not a dating show. This is a business show, but I couldn't recommend a lovelier, more decent, more authentic young man than Matt, who certainly has a heart of gold and a passion to make a difference in the world. Matt, we are completely out of time. I've adored having you on the show. I know that we will keep having conversations over the course of your life. I really value the fact that you've been vulnerable enough to share with us so authentically today. I love the work that you're doing. I can't wait to read the book, and thank you so much for coming on Everyday Business today.
Thank you very much, Tony. I truly appreciate this opportunity. This might not be a dating show, but business is sexy.
That's exactly right. And we want you going traveling all around the world. So we want people to hear Matt's voice over in the US, in the UK, Canada, all over the place. Matt, thank you so much. And that, my audience, is your lot for this week. We'll be back next week. I'm your host, Tony Lontis, and this is the Everyday Business Show. We'll be back again next week. Thanks, Matt. Bye for now, everyone.
Thank you, Tony.
I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible?